Hello and welcome to the Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast, linking business with grassroots sports, with the aim of bringing about positive social change. My name's David Waldridge, and in this special episode, taken from one of our recent Elite Champion networking events, I speak with Kelly Haynes, a truly inspirational athlete with an undefeated streak in K1 fighting and experience across multiple fighting disciplines. It was amazing to hear some of the challenges that she's faced as a sporting athlete. So, without further ado, Kelly Haynes is on the Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast.
Okay, so K1 is quite similar to kickboxing, which everybody probably knows. So the only difference is you're allowed to knee, as in kickboxing as well. You're not allowed to do low kicks. So K1, you can do low kicks, you can do knees. You can, if you hold your opponent's kick, for example, you can strike once, but then you have to let go. The other discipline of martial arts I do is Muay Thai. In Thailand, it's like a very, very high demanding sport. Basically, Muay Thai is, there's a lot of clinch. So a bit like where you make contact, where you hold the neck, but you don't, you can keep on striking. So it's knees, elbows, kicks, low, high, head. In Thailand, they kick to the back. In England, it's illegal. So obviously any trauma to the spine or back of the head is illegal shots. But yeah, I mean, I travel sort of all around the world now, mainly doing Muay Thai, because that's sort of, I love doing Muay Thai. However, obviously I have got some titles and I am undefeated in K1, so it is a sport that I like to do, but it's quite hard when you're doing K1 and you're not allowed to hang on for too long and you're not allowed to elbow. It's quite hard sometimes to chop and change between the sports.
Let's dial it back to right at the start, working with Muay Thai and kickboxing. How did that all begin? How did you even know that was a discipline that you were going to go into?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I didn't. I was a property manager with a company called Wealth Dragons, an investment company, and I was looking after their portfolio of properties. And I literally started back, I was a single mum, and I wanted to just have a little bit of fitness in my life. So at the age of 30, I decided to start a combat fitness just to get fit, really. And I liked doing the kicks and the knees and the punches. So I decided to join actually kickboxing, which was Total Dojo in Bletchley. And literally, my coach at the time was like, you've got a really talented at this. I can really see, you know, some good vibes coming from you competing. Is it something you wanted to do? And obviously, at the time, like I said, I was just a single mum working as a property manager, but I did really, really enjoy it. So I decided to compete at the age of 31. It was my only amateur fight, which was so scary. That was actually a kickboxing fight. So that was where we have to wear a head guard. And it was, an amateur fight. And I went from that one fight straight to getting offered a professional fight. It was such a whirlwind, like, totally. And then, yeah, it was crazy, crazy.
So in terms of, you've re-picked it back up again when you were 30, but when you originally started off at a much younger age, why was that? I understand your brother was a bit of an influence behind that.
Yeah, so when I was 11 years old, I'd done kickboxing because my brother done kickboxing, and I just wanted to do anything my brother did to be better at my brother at anything, you know, like when you've got siblings. And he done, it was English Contact Karate Association, ECKA. I done it for a year, and I decided, again, my trainer at the time, Mark, was like, you know, you should do a little tiny tournament. So I was like, okay, I'll do it. And I was so scared. I only wanted to do it because I wanted to be better than my brother. I wasn't quite sure I wanted to actually compete at that age. But I'd done a little tournament, and I won a Pee Wee National Championship where I had like four fights in one day. Again, obviously, this is children, so it was point scoring. It's not like full contact. And literally, I won the tournament and I never, ever went back. Never doing that again. So I quit the age of 12 and I didn't go back to it at all until I was 30.
How important now, though, were those first few times when you learned when you were a kid? How important were they when you re-picked it up when you were 30? Did you recognise some things from before?
Yes and no. So going back to it, I had so many bad habits. It's almost like riding a bike. You never forget what you learn as a young child. However, when you do kickboxing and it's point scoring, going straight into a martial arts gym where you're doing K1 and Muay Thai, your stance, the technique and everything is a lot different. So even though you know the basics like how to punch and how to kick, your stance is a lot different. And I think sometimes breaking habits is a lot harder than learning a new skill.
I suppose I'm going to kind of flip back forward to when you did re-pick it back up again and you're relearning these skills again and dropping these bad habits, picking up good ones. Why did you do it? Was it that challenge to pick it back up again? What made you make that switch from, you know, just training in the gym to really taking it seriously?
I guess I started to obviously really enjoy it. You must have obviously enjoyed anything if you're going to take it up to that level. I think because obviously I got to the age of 30 and I was thinking I wasn't getting any younger. I think it's a case of when you get opportunities, I didn't want to look back and wish I'd taken up opportunities. So the way I looked at it is I was getting offered at the point very good opportunities, which meant at the time as well, I was coming away from being a property manager to a full-time fighter. And it was either I took that big leap and done the best I could at something I thought I realized I was passionate about as well, because it also made me realize that I loved the fitness industry that much. I had no qualifications as a child. I wasn't very good at school. I was quite naughty, actually. Didn't have very good grades. And so all the way through life, even though I had good careers in different aspects and I was good at what I put my mind to, I was also never really found a passion. So when I started doing the kickboxing side of things, I realized that the fitness industry I loved, and I actually went back and studied to be a personal trainer, which I'd done my level two, my level three, first time I ever got a qualification. So it was also a big part of my life actually realizing that I found a passion at that age as well and what I was good at. So it made me realize that if I was really passionate about martial arts, which I then obviously graded to black belt martial arts instructor, and I loved the fitness industry, what a great combination to put together to be able to offer my services out there for other people that wanted to do it. The fight industry is not easy at all, especially being a mum, because it all happened at once where I decided I wanted to start a female kickboxing, females only combat for people like me who would start fitness and maybe develop other passions for females in the kickboxing industry and have a female trainer. And I started off in 2015 with like eight ladies, and I've built it up today in the fight industry up to like a team of 70. And I've got some of them females now, professional fighters themselves from nothing, exactly like from the background I come from, which I'm really glad to be able to take people on that journey of recognizing if you set goals in life, you just need that the passion in the goal that you're heading towards, but someone to believe in you a little bit, to give you that little, you know, that little boost, the little head start that anybody from any background can get to where they want to be if they're in the right, if they've got the right people around them to guide them. And I think when I obviously won a couple of fights and I thought, you know, I didn't believe in myself enough at the time to get to that point where I was getting offered titles and started traveling the world to fight and compete. And I thought, I'm just as good as anybody else and I'm putting just as much work in as anybody else. So why couldn't the next door neighbor, you know, person that was a property manager be as high and elite as anybody else in the sport?
I just want to pick up on what you said there about paving it forward and training
the next bunch of ladies. The way you spoke about that then was almost with the same excitement as having that first ever fight and reliving that moment when you went into the ring against Harriet Stone. You could see the energy radiating off you for that.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I've got some young girls and mums and just, you know, people that have careers, and literally they come for a fitness element and now they're competing. Oh, okay, some of them are amateur, a couple of them are pro, but I want to allow ladies to feel that, you know, when they're in this sport, it's not just a man's sport to take part in. In fact, when you watch female fights, they're a lot more technical. They take their time in picking shots. It's not a brutal attack where some of the men's fights that you go to, not that I've got nothing against men's fight, I love all competing. I love all the element of MMA, BJJ, kickboxing. But I just want females to feel that some ladies won't come forward because obviously going into that gym where it is a man instructor or it is men doing the sport, that they feel they have to hold back their technique or how good they are or express themselves in that way. And I see the girls train so hard and sweat and literally not give up and love it to the point where there's tears. They love it that much. And they're all getting the same opportunities that I did. And obviously having the fight industry behind me and having so many contacts now, I'm giving them the chances that I had. And it is great because, you know, I work with a lot of charities and I'm an ambassador for MK Act, which is the Women's Refuge in Milton Keynes. And I work with, I started up a group called Boxing Clever with Thames Valley Police. And I'm actually helping sort of youths in secondary schools to be re-diverted away from the gang areas that we've got over in our in our area. And also two other charities, Fit for Life, where it's young girls trying to get back into PE and trying to get them, you know, put some gloves on and get sweaty. It's not bad to, you don't have to look good. You don't have to think about what you look like when you're training. Just enjoy the sport. So I think from my background, where I've come from and what I've had to go through, I think it's good to have someone that can just support you and make you feel good about where you are, whether you're beginner, advanced, what your fitness level is, what you look like. It doesn't matter. It's like, just go in there and do what you want to do and just switch off from whoever's watching you and just enjoy it.
And I think that's what all grassroots organisations strive to do. And we go back to the teenage version of yourself. I'm sure the coach there had the same energy that you do in some ways with that. You touched upon it there, the kind of male and female balance within the sport. And would you say you experienced any kind of prejudice going into the sport at all? Or is that kind of something that we're moving away from now?
Yeah, I think we are definitely moving away from it. But when we go to Thailand and compete, there's still some stadiums over Thailand that even the Thai females aren't allowed to even fight in. So it is still crazy to think that society these days, I think Lupini Stadium, despite obviously the COVID situation currently in Thailand, if I'm right in saying, I believe it was meant to be the 14th or the 15th of May this year that they were allowing the first female Thai fight to compete in Lupini Stadium. You know, females have proven on the fight industry how good the female fights are and boxing side of things. You know, you look at Katie Taylor and you look at, I don't know if people on here know the rankings on the Thais and, you know, Imran Bala, and some of these athletes are just amazing to watch. And that's what I'm saying. It's not a case of being female or male. You know, I'm not taking it away from no one. There's amazing male fighters. But I just think the top female fighters have got such a nice flow and technique and balance to their career. It's almost like there's so many talented women out there and young girls. And I would just love for them to make a decision to wear some gloves and try the sport and not just all think that they're, you know, they should be swimming or doing yoga or, you know, why not try the sport? It's not a case where you have to compete. It's about doing fitness and you know, taking it up as a sport like everything else.
And I think actually what you say there in terms of taking it up is something that's across all sports at a grassroots level, having that confidence to actually join your local football team, your local rugby team, basketball, whatever it is, but also what you did and pick up the sport later on as well. Because I think sometimes when we talk about grassroots, we think of the kids in the park on a Sunday, but actually it is someone like yourself, the office manager, the, you know, working within property, training in the gym, but then taking that next step to do a grassroots sport.
Totally. And I think when you start getting older, and I know obviously I wouldn't say 30 is old, but I'm saying older as we're coming past that, you know, where we start to settle down and we start to try and find our feet. And if we're still in and out of jobs and still not finding what we're passionate about as people, some people in school know what they want to do for the rest of their lives. They've already planned going to college. They've already planned going to university. Me, I think I had so many different jobs and I just knew that I didn't want to spend my life working a job that didn't make me happy. So it took me until, even though I loved being a property manager, I still wasn't passionate about it. I didn't go to work every day thinking, oh, I'm so excited to be here. It was more as soon as the time and lunchtime come, I was excited to get home and I enjoyed the day throughout because I made every day, you know, an enjoyable one. But when it comes to teaching, like when I teach my women now and I go and see my team of ladies, even after my surgery, I was literally like, okay, after the first week, I'm going to start teaching. I'm going to start going back teaching. And my team leader was like, you know, I've got this, don't worry. And I was thinking, oh my God, I'm having withdrawal symptoms just being around such a high-driven, great bunch of women that have just such a the same passion as me. It just makes such a difference. It doesn't even feel like work.
Bring it back to your career for a moment. You went into it, you had this amateur fight, and then the wins started racking up. And you realise, hey, I'm pretty good at this. How did you stay almost grounded then? Where did that value for yourself come from? Because I think it can be quite easy for people once they do turn professional, once it does start having success for them, can easily fall off again. How did you keep that drive, I suppose?
I guess that's where me being a mother, obviously any mother for their children wants their child to grow up that, when you're passionate about something, can you enjoy something, you should give it your all. And basically my son, I never used to let him watch me fight because I didn't want him to see me, his mum, getting punched in the ring. But he got to the age where I started to allow him, when I was fighting local, like at the O2, I would let him come and watch some of the fights. And I think seeing him be proud of me as his mum, it sort of made me want to do more to prove to him anything in life that you set your heart to, or any goals or anything that you want to do, if you work yourself hard enough, you can achieve that.
In 2019, you won Best Female Martial Arts, the British title at the O2 with a TKO in the first round, and the Women's Leadership Award. You won all those things. You know, I was going to ask you, what's the most important? But I think actually the most important thing is what you just said there about how you stay driven. That's the most important thing for you, having that sense of achievement and being an example.
Yeah, totally. Like my awards, I've won some really nice things. I think the best thing, if I'm really honest, that I've probably won, and it was in 2020, in February, I took my students from my I had two secondary schools, and we decided that Thames Valley Police, we was going to run an event for all of the children that we had working for Boxing Clever, all in the secondary schools. We trained them in, so my discipline was K1 and Muay Thai. Another coach that was taking part, and his discipline was boxing, so he taught them boxing. And we basically arranged this event, and it was called the Boxing Clever Exhibition that was in February. And it was literally just as COVID made us all sort of, you know, go into lockdown. And we run this event where we trained all our students that we had. And obviously, you can imagine some of these students, when they first joined us, were quite a handful. And we built such a good rapport in our secondary schools of our students. They become They looked up to us. They would literally do nothing wrong. And these were students that at first you'd put them in a hall and fire extinguishers were going off and windows were getting broke. You couldn't leave them literally for 5 minutes. And in a year, we had such a turnaround with our students because they believed in us as of the coaches, not letting them down and turning up and literally just giving that rapport with each individual and not just treating them as a student. We knew them by name. We took time. There was issues coming out of school. I had them joining our gym and, you know, we were speaking to the parents. It was a very touchy situation because we had to put all of the schools together in one boxing exhibition. And obviously we was worried about post-coded gangs and so forth. So obviously the police, the Thames Valley were there as well. And it was such an amazing event that literally we had the mayor down and we had a few boxing legends turn up. And I've got photos and videos. That day was literally probably one of the highlights of my whole fight career because we'd done walkout songs for all the different schools and all the kids are coming down because they're having a fight and they all got in the ring. And every single one showed the discipline that we'd taught them over the year. And it was just incredible. And we actually won a police award for it in just after February. And I think out of any award in my whole of my fight career, I think that one would be the one that I'll always hold closest to my heart. That was good.
See, now another one of my questions is going to be, what would be your message to that young person who is thinking of taking up a grassroots sport but isn't quite sure about it? But I think you kind of answered it there in a way in terms of just having that confidence and belief in yourself.
Totally. I think anybody's worst enemy is in their head and it's themselves. I think at the end of the day, if you try something and don't like it, then that's it. You've tried it. You don't know unless you try it. But every single person is their own worst critic, their own worst enemy, and their own worst battle. And I look at life as you get one life, and you get opportunities that come and go all the time. I will grab as many opportunities as possibly I can. Some of them I wish maybe I didn't jump in too far with. But at the end of the day, I've never looked back and regretted anything. Like my shoulder, I mean, you know, God forbid if anything did happen now, I could quite happily look back and feel content with my fight career and what I've achieved and feel pleased with myself of what I've done and who I've helped.
And I imagine the mental aspect of a fight career is just as important as a physical aspect. Is that something that you kind of made sure you drill into yourself in some way to have no regrets, go out there and have no regrets with whatever happens?
Oh, a fighter, I think any fighter will completely agree with me. The mental side is probably harder than the physical side. When you're a fighter, you're prepared to go for that roller coaster of increasing your fitness and being strict on your diet, following all the protocols in place. But the higher up the chain you go and the bigger your opponent is, the more mental and stress and challenging time that you've got in preparing yourself for that fight. You never, ever think you're ready enough. Even when you're training to the point where your body is just not even there anymore and you're just moving and you're hurting and everything, it just sounds like the worst possible thing to be doing when you're training for a fight. But anybody at some point, even if they're the top, top, top athlete when it comes to pro fighters in the world, will all have that mental block, that mental challenge that they all have to overcome. And the only thing I can say to anybody, and somebody told me this, one of my coaches, and it made me think as well, and that person that you're about to compete with is going through the same mental challenges as you. They are training just as hard as you. They are hurting just as much as you. They are being injured just as many times as you. They are going through the same strict diets just the same as you. They are only human, the same as you. And it's not that they are any better than you. It's whoever gets in the ring and the best person on the day is the winner of the fight. And that's basically it.
Well, Kelly, you're definitely an inspiring person. The questions are coming flying in. So I think we kind of move over to some of the elite champion questions. Your first one is coming from John. Firstly, asking, there are a lot of Brits who go to Thailand and beat a lot of locals there. Is that because the sport here isn't as popular as it is over there, for example?
I think what it is in when you go to Thailand to compete Muay Thai is because the sport out there is so much more relaxed, as any competition that you do in the UK, everything's so commercialized and, you know, ticket sales and big events and everything's just so in your face 24/7. As out in Thailand, it's such a way of life, to the point of when you're warming up and about to go out in the ring, you walk out with your opponent, you lay down on the table with your opponent, getting Thai oil, a massage. Like, you're even sitting next to your opponent when you're getting your hands wrapped. And in England, it's like, you know, you're in separate rooms, you have to stare your opponent out, and there's none of that. Like, I remember going into a few of my fights, and I remember when I first started to do it, my coach was like, okay, so, you know, when you're doing the weigh-in, you just stand there, you just look at your opponent. And I was thinking, I can't do this. Like, I really, really can't do this. And I remember going on straight up to my opponent, and I was like, hi, how are you? And I just thought, we don't need to be this, like, really, you know, crazy, you know, I'm solid, I'm this incredible Hulk style, because I just couldn't carry it off. I'm like, every time I see my opponent, you know, go and see how they are before and after the fight, because it's a sport, and I'm probably the worst person for it. But even in Thailand, like, we're sitting next to each other and the Thai music is nothing like England, and it's like crazy drums and stuff, and they don't have a clue what I'm talking about. And I'm like, you know, how are you? Are you okay? You know, good to see you. And they're just like nodding and not sure what I'm talking about. But it's a way of life, and I think it's just good to get some ring experience and some sort of fight background behind you, as opposed to in England, it just feels so intense every fight. So it's a lot more relaxed. So I think that's why a lot of people do go to Thailand, to, like I said, get a bit more experience and to get some ring experience in a relaxed environment.
This next question I think you're going to like. It comes from Naki, who's looking for advice and guidance on how parents can encourage young girls who want to learn how to fight to develop in the sport. But also, her organization based over in Uganda are looking to introduce K1 and MMA at a grassroots level. How can they create a framework for that, for, to train the kids in a rural community? Where is their starting point apart from coming to talk to you?
So I definitely wouldn't put it in any in a child's mind about fighting. I think you should go from it as in trying the sport, working technique, doing pads. The sparring side would come a lot later on when you know that that child has control, has good technique. You would never want them just to start, you know, throwing punches and kicks at each other. And obviously, you've got to remember as well, there's a lot of science now and a lot of investigations on head trauma. So if you know about, I'm guessing most of you know about football, so obviously they're not letting children headbutt football anymore. And obviously, even in the sport at a certain age, when children spar, it's only body shots, so there's never no headshots. So I think when you're looking at the words, bringing youngsters into training if they want to fight, I think it's about saying, okay, well, the fighting is a lot more later on down the road. If that's something you want to work towards, it's great to have a goal. But first, you need to prove to me that you understand the discipline of controlling controlling that tempo and working the technique and proving to us that you're dedicated to the sport, and it's not just a case of you wanting to go there and fight the other children. So it's definitely got to be a slow progress into the sport, and it's definitely gonna have to, the child will have to show discipline, have to show they've got control, they've got good pad drills, and also obviously the coach will know when they're ready from that.
George, based in Kenya, was asking a similar question actually as well, and saying that it's about self-awareness within younger people and helping that discipline and that kind of mental side of things. Yeah. More. And I'm going to kind of connect that in a way to Caroline's question. Stay with me on this one. He asks what your son is learning from you, maybe not from a fighting perspective, but those mental aspects that you've learned from your fighting career, I imagine you've passed on to your son in some way.
I'd like to hope so. He doesn't do kickboxing. I would never push my child into any sport that he didn't want to do. He has tried a lot of sport. I encourage him to take part in sport. But let's just say my son, he's so accident prone. He's broken arms and hands. Every time he tries a sport, he breaks something. I think the one thing I would say that I'm really proud that my son's probably taken from me is realizing that he's got determination, and if he's got a goal in life to do something, then he'll work towards it. He's got a very good sales perspective. He's well into IT and well into buying and selling, honestly, and he's really, really clever that way. But again, I think it doesn't matter if it's in sport or what it is, the mentality of me having that goal and working towards it and showing him the dedication that I put into it, I think as a child, it's showing him that if he wants to do something and he's dedicated and he puts time into it, that it's an aspect in any part of your life.
It's kind of nicely leads into Vimal's question that his kids have just got back into jiu-jitsu, which is another discipline of the fighting
world.
Pros and cons of it from a professional opinion, but also does your personal opinion differ from that professional opinion?
I would say jiu-jitsu is amazing for children because there's no head trauma. I think grappling is very important for children to know, especially as a self-defense perspective. If you've got an adult or somebody as a self-defense trying to strike and you're a child, you've got a lot, obviously the first thing is run, but you've got a lot more chance in handling yourself if you know how to grapple or to armbar or to choke than you have trying to strike an adult. So me, I got my son, again, he was good at it, but again, I don't believe that making your child stay in a sport that they're not really finding they're enjoying as much as you'd want them to enjoy. But if I had one sport that I want my son to do anything more than any other sport, would be jiu-jitsu.
And I suppose it's that more tactical approach with jiu-jitsu as well.
Yeah, I think you've got less chance of injury. Mm. You know, like I said, you know, even if it's an accident, there's still you could still get highly hurt from the sport. But also from a self-defense point of view, you know, anybody that has a child that's going through teenage years or, you know, a young girl and that, you know, going out and about and they're just worried about it, I think jiu-jitsu is probably the best defense for a child to learn.
Ben asking, as someone who has to be on weight with what you do, really has to be disciplined, what is your secret and what's the most difficult food to resist?
Cooking my son's dinners. Everybody likes it when they leave a fish finger or a couple of chips. Yes, I think when I usually walk around quite lean anyway because I'm always training and trying to eat healthy. I still have my cheat days. I'm only human. We all let our hair down at the weekends. Apart from obviously when I'm in fight camp training, when I cut down to 50 kg, that was literally probably the worst time of my life. Especially when I'd worked so hard cutting that down that the day before my weigh-in, that was literally the most weight I've ever cut. I think I was cutting from 55 and I was already lean. So that was a lot, but I'd done it. I don't believe in this fast approach to cutting weight. It's done very, very strict. I have lots of nutrition coaches around me. It's done over the case of 8 weeks. So again, it's a very, very long process for me cutting weight. But I remember it was literally the day before the weigh-in, we had to be at the O2 and my opponent got bit by a dog. To be getting flown out from Spain, and I'd weighed in and I was waiting at the O2, we was at the O2 Indigo doing the weigh-in, and then news comes in that she wasn't flying out, she'd got bit by a dog, and I'd cut weight to this, you know, I'd gone from like the biggest into roller coaster of my life. I was that stressed that when I was weighing at 49, so I was thinking because I don't know, she's so stressed. And in the end they flew out another girl from the gym that night and she weighed in like 52. Fight her or I don't fight. I sold like 150 tickets, all my family were there, and it was a Lions fight, who was from Vegas, a Lions fight at the O2, and I was just like, this, honestly, when you're in the fight game, things change and you have to learn to adapt. That's another mental challenge. You have to constantly have that, even when you're preparing for a fight and you're literally hours away from the morning of your fight, things can happen straight away.
Before we move on to our final couple of questions, what's more satisfying, that knockout win that's really quick or actually having a good spar with somebody?
I think the last fight I had in 2019 in Thailand, that was a good fight. I needed that. That went all the way. It was this Thai girl. Oh, she was an animal. Seriously, we just didn't stop throwing elbows for like five rounds. It was just it was the longest. I just thought, I've got nothing else in me. And then the bell just kept going and going. But I had to have that. That felt better, because before that, I just kept getting like knockouts and I felt almost deprived from my training. I felt like the girls that I was fighting, I wasn't being given like big enough opportunities. And then obviously you get someone like that and then you realize, okay, yeah, I didn't expect that. I mean, you never ever underestimate your opponent. That's why I always train to the best I possibly can train to. But I just feel, I feel good when I walk out with no injuries, because then I can see my son and, you know, he's got that, oh, well done, mum, as opposed to, you know, God forbid, if I touch wood, I think I've had one cut, but it was from a teep. He wasn't there to see that, though, and I had a couple of stitches, but God forbid if, you know, you see some of these damages from an elbow cut or something, and I wouldn't like my son to see that. So I am glad with that. But I think my biggest fight was Amina Lamour. I don't know if you guys have ever seen. So Amina Lamour, Kelly Haynes, that was for the English ISCA title. That fight was probably one of my best fights. I'm proud of that fight.
So before we move on to our final question, Bev was asking, just going quickly back to that whole diet regime, is that mostly plant-based, protein-based? How does that work for you?
I'm not really into protein shakes, and I love my, I eat whatever I feel I need to eat depending on my training. I'm very much like, your food is your medicine and make you what you are. So I try to eat everything in a food form. To be honest, I'm a bit terrible on my food. I should be eating way more than I usually do. But usually when I train, I don't want to eat. But then that's a sign of overtraining and you go around in this massive loop. So, you know, I just eat really clean. So I very rarely take protein shakes. I'll probably stick to my BCAAs. I increase my supplements more now just because of my age. And I'm obviously overcoming shoulder injuries. So I'm on, you know, a lot of turmeric and collagen and just everything that I can to boost my whole immune system to try and get these injuries repaired. And I am actually taking some extra protein shakes at the moment, but fight ready. I'm literally, you know, salmon, chicken, veg, rice, very bland, not too much sauce. Still managing my one glass of red wine every Saturday to say it's good for you. And just making sure I just keep well on my food and balancing it out. I think if you eat well and right, you don't need to take all of these fancy branded items that they show and flash in the stores. I think if you've got someone that can give you a little bit of guidance, as long as you feel good and you've got the energy to train and your weight's coming off slowly, that's all that needs to happen.
I just want to know what's next for you. I know you got bronze at the Business Awards for MK and Bucks for Businesswoman of the Year. Brilliant achievement. Well done. So are you looking to take that discipline from the sport into business now? What's next for Kelly Haynes?
Yeah, I think I'm, you know, I would like to get a fight in October, but it's all my shoulder dependent at the minute. I was obviously sponsored by Wealth Dragons, but then COVID, there was no fight. So I'm possibly, if I get a sponsor and my shoulder repairs, then I'm looking to fight a Spanish girl for a WBC belt for a Muay Thai fight, who's at 50 kg. But again, this is very shoulder dependent at the moment. That's why I've got the best team around me helping me. I think my route out is to continue working with Thames Valley and MK Dons as well. I'm starting to do some projects with them. Open up a lot more opportunity for students in schools that would like to be brought into the sport. And yeah, Progress Enigma. The kickboxing Enigma Fitness has now got Enigma Fitness Kickboxing, which is obviously the women's. We were just getting busier with that, and then it went into COVID, so we didn't add any more sessions. So the whole thing now is the fight career is to progress my kickboxing and the fitness side and also the charities.
Final question, I think it's a really fitting question for you as well, coming from Jess. From your previous experience, what's the bit of advice that you would give to women who are wanting to get into a new sport or get back into a sport they had previously? As it can be daunting for some, but you're the example of someone that did it and did it to such a brilliant standard.
You need to think, what's holding you back? Weigh up a list, write down what's holding you back and why do you want to do it? And I guarantee you, the list that you write about all the things that will benefit you with your health, your mental health, you know, your physical health, the fact that you want to do it, and then to the list in comparison to, you know, how will it make you feel when you do it? Everybody knows that when you train, do any sort of fitness, it mentally makes you feel good about yourself. And then you look at the list of what's holding you back from doing it. I guarantee you the other list, the pros of it will way outdo the, you know, the negative thoughts of, you know, the pros and cons. I think you just need to go for it. The only person, like I said from the beginning, the worst enemy is yourself. And if you don't do it when you want to do it, either one day it'll be too late to do it, or you'll look back wishing that you did do it. But anything to do with fitness, anything to do with sport is only ever going to make you feel good about yourself, feel better about yourself, your appearance, your mental health. And, you know, it could open up possibilities. You meet new people, you meet new friends. So just do it. Do it, do it, do it.
And that's it for this episode of the Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast. A big thanks to Kelly Haynes for taking the time to speak with our elite champions and sharing her stories with us. If you fancy getting involved with what we do yourself and seeing the positive social change that we're creating right now with some of our current projects around the world, head over to our website, koisports.co.uk. I've been David Waldridge, and don't forget to like and subscribe to our podcast so you never miss any of our future episodes, where we'll discuss more of the grassroots and business sector next time.